Good morning, I'm Nancy Williams. I'm here for Petals and Prose, and I want to share with you today from a book of essays called River Walking, Reflections on Moving Water by Kathleen Dean Moore. And Kathleen Dean Moore is a professor of philosophy at Oregon State University in Corvallis. She's written essays for the New York Times and for several other places, and this, I think, is her first book of essays. And she is writing about the natural world, which is what I love to read to you about. So hers are more located in Oregon in this case. And she usually titles them by a body of water. This one is called The Clackamas River. They came and got my neighbor this morning. I knew it was going to happen today, but I didn't know that they would move so fast. When I came home for lunch, it was obvious she was gone. The mailbox was standing open, for one thing, and even though the dog's leash was still tied to the porch railing, the dahlias were gone from the bucket by the front door, and the roller blinds were pulled down in the living room. Lillian would never have pulled down the blinds. She always drew the curtains. I had gone over to see Lillian before breakfast this morning. I knocked, pushed open the front door, and called out, "It's just Kathy," the way I always do. But the house smelled of cardboard boxes, not toast, and the living room walls were blank except for a row of clean white squares, each with a picture book centered at the top. A few things no one wanted still sat on the carpet, too good to throw away. The beaver-collared coat, a stack of sauce dishes, a gardenia in bloom. And next to them, Lillian sat bolt upright in a big chair, dry-eyed, her art collection propped against her knees. She wasn't going to go, she said. She wasn't as old as they thought. She had made up her mind, and she would not be bullied by her own son. And now she's 90 miles away in the West Hills Manor, probably sitting in that same yellow chair. So I stand now with a few neighbors who are gathered across the street, watching the empty house and talking quietly, urgently, as if the house had just burned down. I tell my neighbors I feel sorry for Lillian, and I really do, but the other person I feel sorry for is myself. What will I do without Lillian? Who will call each morning at 7 to say she can't unlock her front door, and will I send my husband over right away to shove on it? Who will notice my comings and goings and tell me that I work too hard? Who will tell our daughter to stand up straight? And who will measure herself against our son and say, "Is this Jonathan? He's so tall, I hardly recognize him." Lillian called at least 3 times a day in the week before she left, telling me to come right over. She had something for me. So now, instead of having Lillian, I have a Waterford crystal pitcher, a pair of gaudy shower thongs that she never wore because they looked like they were made for an old lady, a pen and ink sketch of the tree peony in her backyard, and a collection of gramophone recordings of Carmen Cavallaro playing songs like In My Merry Oldsmobile. The records are heavy black plastic with a little hole in the center and grooves on one side only. I don't know what I'll do with them. Lillian said it was wild music, not what she likes, but maybe the young people would like it, not knowing that young people no longer have gramophones or phonographs or tape decks or even CD players sometimes. She gave me an egg cookbook that her daughter had written and one about cooking soup. I stood beside her while she sat at the desk in her library and thought about what to write on the title page. To Kathy from Lillian, who likes soup, Aunt Kathy. I stared hard at the ceiling to keep from crying, thinking what a rare and wonderful thing it is to be liked the way a person likes soup. Lillian made me feel young. "I thought you were a child," she would tell me. I said to myself, "Who is that child raking up the moor's leaves?" She made me feel competent and calm. Everything she asked me to do was easily within my abilities, opening a medicine bottle, turning on a fan, disconnecting a garden hose. Except the last thing, I was not able to tell her son she wasn't going to go. I didn't even make the phone call because I couldn't figure out what was right and what was wrong. Lillian forced me to spend part of each day doing nothing. I would no sooner get home from work than she would call. "Can you use a banana? Well, then come right over." never please, or is this a convenient time, just come over right away. So I would cross the street, walk up her front steps, knock, push open the front door, call out, "It's just Kathy," and then wait in the front hall for what would always happen next. Lillian closes the front door behind me, crosses through the dining room, stands in the center of the kitchen, and remembers it was bananas. Yes, bananas. So she picks up a banana and turns it over in her hands, as if it were a scientific specimen of a banana. Maybe she will put it in a bag for me. There should be a bag in that drawer. I choose a bag, but it isn't the right one. Oh, and could I use some gelatin salad? Somebody gave it to Mrs. Sartwell's sister, who gave it to Lillian, who never eats gelatin salad. So now, gelatin salad, what to put it in? Lillian, do you know what I could have accomplished in the time it took you to give me a banana? I could have emptied the dishwasher, changed Jonathan's orthodontist appointment, paid the electric bill, found Aaron's soccer ball, and returned a phone call from the dean. Everything and nothing. So I stood in Lillian's kitchen and became part of an old woman's life for a while, until she thrust the banana at me and said, "You better go," as if I were keeping her from her work. Lillian kept track of our family. Each time we bumped out of the driveway pulling a boat, she came out onto her porch, stood with her hands on her hips, and said, "Now where are you going?" We would name a destination, and every time she would say in a softer voice, "I used to go canoeing on the Clackamas when I was young. We had picnics on the gravel bars. There were blue herons." "Yes," we'd say, "we remember you said so." Then we pulled out, and in the rearview mirror, her hands dropped off her hips and hung at her sides, and she watched us leave, witness to her own past disappearing around the arborvitae hedge, weekend after weekend. By now, almost all the old men in our neighborhood have died. The first to go was Mr. Jensen, whose house we occupy. Mr. Jensen of Jensen Hill, Ag Extension, Oregon State University, died sitting in a chair in our living room when it was his living room, and his daughter was at the theater. Mrs. Jensen moved into a nursing home and died there last year, after 12 long years, so now we send the mortgage checks to the daughter in San Francisco. But most of the women are still here, all widowed, of course, nursing friendships that are 70 years old, living in the gracious white houses where they raised their children, close by campus, where the sweet gum trees they planted are 40 feet tall and overhang the street. They came as students to Oregon State University when it was Oregon Agricultural College in 1922, arriving on the train from Portland with their dresses in a steamer trunk. Lillian was a tall girl with mannish hair and good posture, standing stiffly in the old photograph on her dresser in front of the girls' dorm. She married Walter, the dean of students. Mrs. Sartwell was a cheerleader, the same Mrs. Sartwell who doesn't get out much now except to water the geraniums on her front porch rail. Mrs. Wilson was the president of Alpha Chi Omega. She married the chairman of the food science department and had 3 children, and then she was president of the faculty wives. They all graduated from Oregon Agricultural College in the B curriculum, which meant no science required. I wish I knew what they have come to know. I wish I knew how they continue to live while layers of their lives are peeled away like successive layers of skin. How did they help each other live through the departure of all the children, leaving one by one, and then the deaths of their husbands dying one by one, a lottery of loneliness? When all the old people leave, young families will move into these wonderful old houses, and their children will buzz up and down on their big wheels, and we will give them cookies and show them pictures of our children, and we will be the old people in the neighborhood. Ultimately, my friends and I will all be widows and former things, former professors, former attorneys, former RNs, who were once married to former biology profs and political scientists. Our children will worry about us living alone, but will phone to say that it's hard to get away when you have a young family and a new job. For now, the old people are a bulwark against our own advancing age and uselessness. Lillian's house sold in 3 hours for a breathtaking amount of money, and her son never told her it was sold. even though she was still living in it, as she had lived there for 58 years. It's a young couple moving in, an accounting professor and his wife, an agronomist. The crews come tomorrow to tear out the carpet and refinish the floors. Thanks for being with me. I'm Nancy Williams, a former professor. See you next time.